copy your friend's lives and pass one on to you. Well, how do you think that I found out that Henry needs new shoes? But I'm convinced that she could find something better to do.
Welcome to Gossip Talking Blues. Hi, this is Martin.
And this is Leslie.
We have another special guest lined up this week, so let's go ahead and whet your musical appetite with a recent track from our upcoming guest today.
Seems we have reached a critical call, a selling point, a Berlin Wall, down an American highway. Empties out to a piano unplayed in an empty house. I wanted to believe that the weather was done, but the clouds overhead tell me we should run. I've been scratching and digging and dancing around these words on the page that could hold their ground. But it seems we're just in for the same. Feels like it wants to rain. Feels like it wants to rain. If it's bred in the bone, if it runs in the blood, how do we not see the storm before we stood in the flood? If we're free to climb to higher ground, why not take my hand and not choose to drown? Well, I guess we just took ourselves in vain. Feels like it wants to rain. Like it wants to rain. Well, we're long past the Bible now, we're into the brush. Long past the gold and into the rush. We are closer than ever, yet fear and embrace. Just rebel hearts growling while we're looking for grace. Keep changing and changing, but the lesson is the same. Feels like it wants to rain. Feels like it wants to rain. We walked in hope down these ancient alleys, born of a time before our sweet follies. Our love was one red room, sweet girl, but suddenly around us was this world. And I feel like you and I have been framed. Feels like it wants to rain. Feels like it wants to rain. Like it wants to rain.
You just heard Feels Like It Wants to Rain from our guest today. From Newfoundland, we are very excited to have Ian Foster here with us today. Ian, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We had the pleasure of meeting you and seeing you perform live here in Pennsylvania in our neck of the woods last summer at an event in Exton, Pennsylvania with Harrow Fair. And I know you also tied that into your trip to the Philadelphia Folk Festival. Now, it's been a few months since those appearances. Do you have any particular fond memories or experiences that came out of that time in Pennsylvania?
None at all. Just kidding.
Excellent.
Of course, yeah. It was a really, really great time. I mean, I'd known about the Philadelphia Folk Festival for years prior. Of course, I believe that it's the oldest long, like consistently running outdoor folk festival in North America. I think that's the tag that they use. Cause I believe there was a thing where Newport was technically older, but they stopped for a while or something. Someone was telling me. So, yeah, it was cool to hear that very, you know, that specific sort of legacy of the festival. And obviously the acts that they had the year that I was there last year, as well as the long history, are just, you know, incredible performers, people I'd known for a very long time. So just being any kind of part in that was pretty special moment for me and my own festival history. And then Exton was some icing on the cake. You know, it was through one of the promoters for the festival brought me into that show with fellow Canadians, Harold Fair, who I actually had heard them for the first time in Philly and really enjoyed their music. And I ended up playing Miranda Maholland is half of that band. And I ended up playing in her room at Folk Alliance this February. So there you go. I mean, I guess it's sort of the how things go when it comes to the touring lifestyle. You know, you encounter people once and then you continue to see them at these kind of events throughout the year. So yeah, it was a really nice weekend at the beginning of August last year to be in Philly.
It certainly was great catching up with you, Ian, on that, as I recall, a very hot and humid evening in Exton. We fortunately at that time had our chance to chat with you after the show, and you did mention to us that your next step beyond that was to head out across the seas to Europe for a string of shows. Very curious to learn how that trip went for you, and do you have any tales about those European adventures that you'd like to share here today?
Yeah, I mean, we could probably do a several part series on that tour alone. It was a pretty amazing time. It was the most ambitious tour that I maybe have ever done, certainly overseas. It was 35 shows, and it was in Germany, Austria, the Netherlands, and Italy. And I had been to all of those places technically before, but we had actually only ever played one show in Germany of the times we'd been overseas. We'd mostly done Netherlands and Italy. So the majority of the shows this time were in Germany. I think something between 20 and 25 of them were in Germany. So that was a really intense and excellent introduction to that country musically for us. We lived in Bremen near the Netherlands border in Germany for a month. We had an apartment there. You know, we had our local grocery store that we went to and would drive out to gigs basically each day. And that was a really great experience. You know, it was nice to be rooted in a particular place for a period of time. And it was quite the experience. We were there overseas for about 2 months. And the first month, it was almost a show a day. And then it sort of relaxed a little bit towards the end. And that gave us a chance to do a little sightseeing as well. You know, it's funny how people think, maybe people perceive a tour, not you guys, I'm sure you talk to enough musicians, but that there's any degree of sightseeing involved, and sightseeing tends to be the drive to the gig and the walk around the block, you know, between soundcheck and the show is sort of the amount of sightseeing you get to do. So we were lucky that we were smart enough, I should say, to take the time at the end to go, you know, we're already here, let's take some time off at the end and actually be human beings and look around a little bit. So being able to do that and combine that with the wonderful people we met at the shows was just, it led to a really full experience, I think.
Excellent. It must be fun. I know growing up in the UK, I had the pleasure of seeing the Rankin family back in their day, and they played a small town close to where I used to live. And exactly what you said there, after sound check and before the show, they had the opportunity to go for a walk and came back. And the first thing they wanted to do was ask the audience about the significance of statues and historic nameplates outside of the building. So, like you say, you get that little bit of tourism thrown in there, even though you're there really strictly business. So, but just the mention of Europe, Ian, leads me to the next song that we'd like to play today. The track Postcards was another original song that you shared with us on that evening in Exton. And of course, the wicked Englishman in me naturally gravitated to the tale you told of being deported from France, for which you, of course, have my fullest support or sympathies. Take it as you will. please, I'd love you to share that story once more, as I'm sure that many of our listeners would love to hear of such dastardly deeds.
That's right. Well, yeah, I guess it's building my international criminal cred. I don't know, but it's a strange story all the way around. First of all, and I'm not sure how many of your listeners will know this, because I'm sure there's many Canadians who may not know this, but there are two little islands called St. Pierre and Miquelon, about 10 miles off the coast of the Grand Bank, like the town of Grand Bank area of Newfoundland. And they are France French. They are French colonies. You need a passport to go there. They use euros instead of dollars. You have to bring your adapter for your phone. The electrical current is voltage, you know, European voltage. They ship over European cars. It is very much a France, as opposed to Canada. But it's very close. As I said, it's not a very expensive ferry. It's a very short ride. And there's only about 2,000 people who live on both islands combined. So that alone makes for a really interesting weekend if you ever are in Newfoundland and would like to go to technically France. you can go to St. Pierre. And I went over with my partner Nancy for a show. And the venue, the way that visas work in France, I guess, this is my one and only time touring in France. But the venue is supposed to submit some paperwork to, I guess, the local bureau or whatever. Anyway, they did not submit that. And when I said I was coming for work, they detained me at the border and said I would have to leave immediately. Now, immediately here, which is a classic Newfoundland thing, was the next day, because there was one boat a day. So we had one day of tourism where we could walk around St. Pierre and look around. And it was a good thing that we didn't go play our show, because they had warned us. They said, if you try to go play this show, we'll take you off the stage. And we saw the border guards about seven more times that day just walking around town, because we're talking a really small town here. So it's definitely like a caper style tale. You know, you could make probably a movie about this. But anyway, what ended up happening for us was that we walked around the town, and we have this little tradition of sending postcards to ourselves, which is sort of this is the tale I told, of course, as you said, before I played this song in Exton. And so that day we decided we would send a postcard to ourselves about our travels in France. And I would retell our tale as the plot of Les Miserables, where, you know, the border guard was Javert and there were empty chairs and empty tables because we weren't able to do our gig. It was quite a deep dive into Les Mis. I was impressed with myself. Nancy is more the musical fan than me, but I wanted to cheer her up, and she's a big Les Mis fan. So it started as a little joke, and we posted to social media, and CBC ended up doing a story about this tale, you know, with the postcard prominently displayed. I mean, for the most part, you know, it was very, very tongue-in-cheek, but I can legitimately say that I was deported from France. And I haven't tried to go back to France. I have no idea if what would happen if I did, but maybe that'll be part two of postcards.
And certainly fodder for a future broadcast with you, I'm sure. Well, let's go ahead and play postcards right now.
They send postcards to themselves to remind them what they share, to remind them they were there and there were answers between the lines of how they fare, crossing ground and air, a code for them of what they knew was treasure. They were sending an SOS back to themselves to not forget it. We can be whoever we want to be. They were sending an SOS back to themselves to not regret it. We can be wherever we want to be. They send postcards to themselves, another item for the shelf, a talisman made by and for the sender, a personal mystery on the other side of stock photography, there for anyone to read, a sweet surrender. They were sending an SOS back to themselves to not forget it. We can be whoever we want to be. They were sending an SOS back to themselves to not regret it. We can be wherever we want to be. So write these words under the burning sun. The journey is only as far as we can run. Ooh, and remember this, under some foreign sky, we are here to live our lives. Send postcards to themselves to remind them what they share, to remind them they were there and there were answers.
So that was Postcards from our guest today on Gossip Talkin' Blues, Ian Foster. So sticking with this theme of travel, you recently traveled to Kansas City for the annual Folk Alliance International Conference. I grew up in Kansas, and I know that the last place that anybody would want to go in February is Kansas or Missouri, as the case may be, because of the very chilling February winters. Chilling probably pales in comparison to Newfoundland chilling, but at any rate, what inspired you to take part in the conference, and what highlights could you share from the experience, both as a performer and if you had a chance to hear other artists as a spectator?
Well, you know, I'll say right off the bat, maybe I'll riff on what you just said, because I was saying this joke to some friends of mine. So I had to fly from Newfoundland to Toronto, of course, because that's how every flight out of Newfoundland goes usually, to get to Kansas City. And so I met up with all of my Toronto friends on that same flight to Kansas City that first morning of the conference. And on my flight from Newfoundland to Toronto, there were a number of people sitting across from me in the waiting area with beach towels over their shoulders. And I just had that sort of moment that was like, you know, I'm excited to go to Folk Alliance, but I kind of wish I was going where those people are going when they connect in Toronto. and then I sort of had this idea, what if we start our own conference next February? It can happen a different weekend than Folk Alliance. It doesn't have to conflict, but I'm just thinking, given the sort of expense of getting to a remote area, you know, I would say that, you know, for the same cost, we could find some all-inclusive 7-day February escape. We could still do showcases. We could have, you know, some mixers. I mean, all the drinks will be free, of course. You know, we'll all communally eat together, sort of like some of the conferences do in the buffet area. I mean, I think some great work can be done. Perhaps you guys can come as delegates, you know. What do you guys think of that idea?
I think that's a fabulous idea. Any trip in February to a warm place, it sounds, particularly with music, would be totally appealing.
Beach towels and sunscreen. What a way to go in February, right?
I'm just thinking that's the music conference we need in February, you know. but all jokes aside, I mean, Folk Alliance was, it was my first Folk Alliance International. I'd done some of the regionals before, the SURFA, NERFA, those kind of events. And that was really great. There was a lot of friends I'd made from those that were at Folk Alliance. So that, I mean, as a touring musician, that I think that's one of the most fun parts, I guess, of those conferences, is you get to be in the same room with all those people that you cross paths with throughout the year, but you don't actually get to hang out with for very long because everybody is kind of going to their own gigs, you know? So that part of Folk Alliance was really great.
Well, for a while, Ian, we considered trying to make the trek to Kansas City ourselves, but for a variety of reasons, it just did not work out this year. However, in 2019, the same event is set to take place a little closer to home for you in the city of Montreal. That's certainly a city that that we certainly to always enjoy a visit to, and plan to be there shortly. As two fans of Canadian folk music, what would we expect in Montreal if we determine that this is a trip we can make?
Besides the totally warm weather in Montreal in February, of course.
See what I mean? If we did this southern one, anyway, we'll see. We'll see if I can get it off the ground. Montreal is one of my favorite cities in the country. It's definitely, I think, our most European city, you know, perhaps other than Quebec City. I think it's you know, an incredibly artistic place. It's going to be a really cool place, I think, to have this event. I don't think it's the first time it's there. It's the first time, again, you know, I just attended for the first time this year in Kansas. So it'll be my first time attending Folk Alliance in Montreal. But the advice I would give outside of the conference, honestly, is try to stay a little longer, either go early or stay late and actually get a chance to go out and see it. Because that's the other thing with these conferences. You know, I can't really say that I was in Kansas City in a real way. I mean, I was in a hotel that looked out on Kansas City, and I looked out the window a lot. But honestly, like, it's so immersive and it's so busy, particularly Folk Alliance. I think it's about 2,500 delegates that, you know, you'll be so immersed in the conference that you won't really get to do anything else. So if you're able to stay a little longer and actually get out and see Montreal, that would be my recommendation.
In the space of just a few short months last summer, we actually got to see several East Coast and Newfoundland artists, such as yourself, paying tribute to the memory of the late Ron Hynes. It was wonderful to hear you do the same with your version of the track, You Left a Song. You offered up a really wonderful tale about Ron during that show. And we were wondering, before we go ahead and play that track for our listeners, would you care to share that story with
us? Of course,
them?
Yeah. So I wrote a song with Ron years ago for my first record. It's a song called Decisions from my album Room in the City, which came out back in 2007. And then over the next decade or so, Ron was sort of a mentor to me in a very casual way. You know, I would run into him. St. John's is a small town and the music community is even smaller. And so I would run into him off and on, and he would offer me little pieces of advice, or we'd end up hanging out at a club together and just talking about music. And, you know, I do remember one particular night when, you know, perhaps some drinks had been imbibed, where he declared Ian Foster, what was the phrase? He said, if Buddy Holly and Ron Hynes had a baby, it would be Ian Foster. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, but I nevertheless asked if I could include it in my press kit at some point, because I thought that was pretty funny. And so, yeah, he was somebody that I knew in that way. He was always wonderful to me. He was always an inspiration to me as just a really dedicated to the craft kind of songwriter. And his story of his passing here in Newfoundland was pretty miraculous. The power went out in thousands and thousands of homes within about 20 minutes of the news of his passing coming to light. And there were so many stories that are still surfacing from that night, where former members of the wonderful Grand Band, which Ron was in years ago, were getting set to play their various gigs in different venues. And all those gigs got canceled because the power went out. One of my favorite stories, which I think I might have told in Exton, was about Fred's Records, where they heard the news and they put on Crier's Paradise, one of Ron's most popular albums, to close out the store. And this little record store in downtown St. John's, all the power went out on that street, Duckworth Street, up to and including the building attached to Fred's, but not at Fred's that night. So, you know, the record continued to spin. And then as for me, I was in my house, in downtown St. John's, the power goes, I get a text message within about 5 minutes from a friend to pass on that news. And I was just sitting there in the dark, you know, with that information and feeling obviously all the various feelings you would feel from something like that. And I took my guitar down and just started to strum in the dark and think about Ron and his legacy and, you know, the sort of bittersweet, so many of the bittersweetnesses of his life, you know, but the best parts of him were all those songs that he left behind him in various places and through the various events that he experienced. And, you know, it really, you know, he was just one of those people, I think, that embodied that folk singer tradition amongst the best of people I've personally met, you know, in the sense that he, so much of his catalog documents how he lived and the experiences that he took in as a Newfoundlander and then, you know, turned out as songs. And so I wrote this song that night and I played it at his funeral reception later that week. And then a story I don't think I told during that, because, I mean, you know, there's only so much you can say on stage before a song. But there was a show that he had booked at the Ship in St. John's for the Thursday after he had passed. And basically something like 20 or 25 musicians from around town honored his last gig by going and playing his songs at that show. And so it you know, basically through word of mouth, it got announced that, and the radio, that this was going to happen. And it was a night like nothing else I'd ever seen. I mean, the Ship is sort of a, you know, it's a mainstay in the St. John's music scene. Everybody knows the Ship. If you come to town and say, where can I go to hear live music? That will be probably the first place most people will say. So I've been there countless times, been on that stage countless times, but had never seen the lineup, you know, down the stairs of this alleyway the way it was that night. All of the chairs and tables removed from the venue because it's, you know, a less than 200 person venue. It was just a night that started, I think it's something like 8 or 9 o'clock and went till 2 a.m. of just people playing Ron Hines songs. So that was sort of a week of miracles and wonders here in St. John's, Newfoundland, that week that he had passed. And it was nice, at least for my involvement in it, that it was all related to the legacy of his songwriting.
That's terrific. It just makes me think of, you know, artists, when they do pass on, they leave a slice of themselves behind, not only in the songs that they write, but in the ways that they inspire other musicians.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we're going to play You Left a Song now from Ian Foster.
Left a song in the stones of Solomon's Lane, a song at the bar of the rose, a song in the water under bridges you burned, a song for a lifetime that goes. You left a song with the dogs roaming the streets, a song for running out the door. You left a song in the honor of an island in tears, a song on the ocean's floor. So tell me, how did you make them all shine, even in the darkest night? How did you break so many hearts just by turning off the lights? You left a song on the ice, a song in the cards, in the eye of the needle's sting, a song in a young man's rambling shoes, a song at the heart of things. You left a song in the rooms of your empty home, a song on a distant shore. You left a song on the step as you were walking away, to show us there could be more. So tell me, how did you make them all shine, even in the darkest night? How did you break so many hearts just by turning off the lights. So tell me, how did you make them all shine? Even in the darkest night, how did you break so many hearts just by turning off the lights? Just by turning off the lights.
You just heard Ian Foster's song, You Left a Song, and Ian is one of the very first artists who encouraged us to consider adding a podcast to our Great Dark Wonder blog. We are so incredibly grateful that you're spending time with us here today to discuss these musical adventures of yours. I noticed via social media that you recently returned home from a quick trip out to Western Canada. And naturally, I want to ask you, how was that trip? And did you find time to put pen to paper and work on new material while you were out there?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I can say that this particular trip was to the Banff Center for the Arts. It was part of a singer-songwriter residency that I found out I was going to be taking part in December of this last year. And without a doubt, it was an artistic highlight for me of the last couple of years. You know, I mean, certainly tours and all that are artistic highlights, but they are work. You know, they're that performance side of what an artist does. And it's actually kind of, I'm not sure what it is, if it's interesting, sad, a little of both, that it seems like songwriters get so few opportunities to do what I was lucky enough to be able to do in March, which was just immerse myself just in writing, just in creativity, at a place that had resources geared solely for that, in terms of the equipment that they had, in terms of the people and the staff that were there, the quarters that they assigned me for creation. You know, I had a my own studio there that I worked out of. And the whole point in this program, it was myself and I think about 28 or 29 other songwriters from around the country and the world were there for the same reason, which was self-directed creation. You know, I kind of dubbed it grad school for songwriters, which is sort of what it felt like. And it was a really great experience to just be there in the mountains of Banff, Alberta, being with some really incredible faculty that included people like Lynn Miles, incredible Canadian songwriter. Kevin Welsh was the artistic director of the program. Howard Billerman was the producer in residence. You know, he's a Montreal-based producer whose credits include Arcade Fire and Leonard Cohen. Fats Kaplan was the in-house session player on a bunch of the songs that we were working on there. His credits are, you know, Jack White and John Prine, you know, like just really amazing musicians at the peak of their abilities. And they were all there in the center to learn with and to work with. So it was, it was an absolutely wonderful time.
So you had this fabulous trip and then you flew home, and as has happened to you now once before, you had an instrument damaged in transit. We'll leave the airline unmentioned. Once is unfortunate, twice is just plain wrong. You know, not to dwell on the specifics perhaps of this incident, but is there anything maybe that airlines or the government could do to minimize this risk? Because on the one hand, perhaps to some extent, this is the cost of doing business and being a musician who travels frequently. And you have to take have an instrument that's fairly fragile. But on the other hand, it seems like that instrument's fragility should be respected a bit more by airlines and maybe protected a bit, since that is how you and your colleagues earn your living. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that, be it general, be it specific, be it a rant, be it just some suggestions.
Well, I could definitely rant, but I won't. I'll resist that. I mean, I think that the single biggest problem I'm encountering, both in my own experience and talking with other musicians, is the lack of solid rules for these things. And I'm sure if anyone, you know, anyone's first instinct would say, well, there's, you know, there's a music, there's a instrument policy on every airline's website. And there absolutely is. Unfortunately, in my experience, that never plays out that way in actual practice. You know, a lot of airlines have policies where, and this is my experience specifically with the couple of Canadian airlines whose rules are basically all the same, which is that if an instrument fits in the overhead at the time that your zone is boarded, you're able to carry it on. And in my experience, that's just not the case. And it does say later in the rules that it's at the discretion of the flight crew, which sort of makes the previous rule irrelevant, you know, because if you get there and the flight crew doesn't feel like that's possible for any reason, then it's gate checked usually. And gate checked is definitely better than typical baggage check. It just means it doesn't go on as many conveyor belts and things through the airport. It's not handled by as many people. It's the last thing to go on the plane, the first thing to go out, but it is in an unheated compartment under the plane. It is put in there with other usually heavy duty things that, you know, can slide around, and certainly things can still happen. I mean, if it's out of your hands, it's out of your hands. And unfortunately that just means that there will always be incidents, you know, there's no other way around it. And, you know, again, I mean, if 20 people carried guitars onto a plane, you wouldn't be able to fit them all on there. There are some overheads in smaller planes that are not able to fit a guitar case. These are just the realities of flying, you know. But the frustration I found is I can't tell you the number of times where someone has said, no, sir, I'm sorry, your guitar is not allowed on the plane. And I've shown them the rules from their website that I, you know, went and looked in advance. And then they said, well, actually, the plane is full, you know, and when that happens, you know, there's a certain bit of customer faith that's destroyed, because you're like, I thought the rule was I couldn't carry it on. But now that I've shown you that it's not your rule, it's a different rule. So I feel like there's an education that has to come from the airline on down through the employees, because there's just been too many times where it seems like I know the rule of the airline better than the employee. And I don't feel that that's right as a customer, you know? And this is not to say that I haven't gotten amazing treatment from airlines. I've gotten excellent treatment from, you know, all of the airlines that have also given me bad treatment. That's kind of more my point than anything else, is the inconsistency of that. And that's almost makes it more surprising that I've flown the exact same airline and had my instrument handled with incredible care and incredible awareness from the staff. And then literally, like, I can actually think of one incident, being purposely vague here, as you said, just to leave out names. But I can think of one that was literally a round trip itinerary, where the trip down was one way and the trip back was a complete other way with, you know, all of the problems that we're discussing here. So, I believe the AFM, which is the Musicians Union, is, you know, they've done some lobbying that's made the current rules what they are, because I think they were even more vague in the past than they are now. But I think there's still a ways to go just in terms of solidifying, you know, what should actually happen. Because let's face it, I mean, I'm sure that I'm not the first person to ever carry a guitar on a plane every time I board, you know? So these are things that should be just, you know, sort of obvious one way or the other, I think. And I think there's still just a ways to go on that.
Fascinating stuff, Ian. Thank you. I mean, as music fans, we're always obviously familiar with seeing those guitars ready on their stand on stage when we get to a venue. But of course, like the musicians, they're well traveled too. We need to start wrapping up this podcast now, and certainly want to go ahead and thank you for spending time with us today for this little chat. We definitely appreciate you finding time to do this with us. And as always, it's been an absolute delight to share some of your music today and hear tales around them.
Thanks so much. I honestly love podcasts in general. As a touring musician, honestly, I spend a lot of time in transit. So podcasts are a wonderful way to pass the time. I love the sort of long form interview format that they allow. So I think it's great that you guys are doing this. And thanks so much for having me on.
Well, let's finish up by going ahead and playing one more track from Ian Foster from his Sleeper Years album. Here is Killing Frost.
Ain't gonna bother me, no, that Killing Frost. I don't want it back if it's already lost. Ain't gonna bother me, no, that Killing Frost. I don't want it back if it's lost. How many times can we say we didn't try? Is regretting the past, or is it here in our eyes? I am the same as I've always been, just weathered by the wind. Ain't gonna bother me, no, that Killing Frost. I don't want it back if it's already lost. Ain't gonna bother me, no, that Killing Frost. I don't want it back if it's lost. I need something tonight, I don't know what it is. Maybe a kiss goodbye, maybe just a kiss. I'm a little colder now that the days are not so long. They say that's the price of being strong. Ain't gonna bother me, no, that Killing Frost.
That Killing Frost.
I don't want it back if it's already lost. Ain't gonna bother me, no, that Killing Frost.
That Killing Frost.
I don't want it back if it's lost. Seems fear has it all as the summer turns to fall. So far from heaven, but I don't see us lying down. You don't owe the devil ground or a new confession, no.
Is already lost.
Ain't gonna bother me, no, that Killing Frost. I don't want it back if it's lost. I don't want it back if it's lost. I don't want it back if it's lost.
This has been Gossip Talkin' Blues, the podcast from Great Dark Wonder. To learn more about Ian Foster and to order his music, please visit his website at ianfoster.ca. To learn more about Great Dark Wonder and to read some of our articles and great content about Canadian music, visit our website at greatdarkwonder.com. Please be sure also to subscribe to this podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again soon.